All right. So thank you, BBS Radio, for making this possible for us. Broadcast worldwide over the internet. This is the Monday evening wildcard show with Winfrey. He's located in Sedona, Arizona, and he will be checking in here briefly. And let us wait and see what's going to happen during the show tonight. Last week, it was our dear friend Lauren from Washington State who was with us, and hopefully he will call in tonight again and see if we're going to pick up last week's call. This is October the 19th, 2020. My name is Gijs Minderhout, located in California. And as usual, this is a simulcast with a conference call. I welcome the next person. If you want to, please say a name and location.
Hi, hi. It's Jennifer from Greensburg. Hi, everyone.
Good evening, Jennifer. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Hi, John.
Hi, Jennifer.
My suggestion would be Lauren and Wynn and Terry.
Yes, yes.
Hi.
Yeah, Lee, and this was... Be there, Terry. It is very interesting. Three people, it makes a difference.
Yeah,
good evening.
Okay.
Right. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Roger. Hi. Boston.
Hey,
Roger.
Hi,
Roger. Roger and Bonnie. Bonnie, welcome.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi,
Bonnie.
Hi,
Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
All right. And welcome to all of you that have joined in online through BBS Radio. We are glad that you are here with us. And welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
It's Wynn in Sedona.
Welcome,
Wynn.
Hi, Wynn.
Hi, Wynn.
Hello, everybody.
And welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Lauren from Porch, Washington.
Good evening, Lauren. Welcome.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Howdy.
All right.
Hey, we're
live.
We're live on BBS. Hello, everyone.
Yes, we are.
On BBS. And Lauren and I are going to talk about the quantum field.
Ooh, good.
And I'm not going to talk too much. I don't think.
Terry,
I won't promise.
Terry will participate as well.
Cool. Well, I don't know.
Hope so.
I'll be here. I'll be here. I'll say that.
Maybe you can bring some of your friends in.
Yeah, maybe you bring some of your friends in. Yeah.
Now that Terry isn't shy anymore, you don't know what she's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we had someone else join in. Good evening to you. Welcome. Please say your name and location.
Hello, everybody. It's Jane in Pennsylvania.
Good evening, Jane. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, everybody.
Jane, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Are you as together as you sound?
No.
Okay.
You're pretty together, Jane. She comes in on her Saturday calls, and she seems like she has her crap together better than I do.
A carefully crafted illusion.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's all done with smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, considering the weather lately, you know, with the fires.
Goodness. Ooh. Bad analogy.
So how has the weather been lately?
Where?
In Washington, raining, right?
Yeah.
Let me first welcome the next caller. Good evening. Please say your name and location.
Good evening, hi. Wanda in Canada.
Welcome,
Wanda.
Hi, Wanda.
Hi, Wanda.
Do any of you have Raiden's phone number for appointment?
I do. Okay.
Are you going to mail it to me or email it to me?
Yeah. Are you going to come to Sedona?
No, my sister-in-law they own land, place down there, and she has to come down there to sell it. And she's over in, Winnenburg?
Right, Wittenberg.
Yeah, Wittenberg. Yeah, she's over there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So Wanda, send an email to Wynn with in the headline, Raiden's phone
number. She already did.
You okay, know, okay.
I don't know if I would highly recommend him for someone that doesn't come to our calls, okay?
Yeah, she knows about her calls, though, for years, because I've been telling her, you know, that, but...
The only reason is, let me just tell you,
they have to be in the God light in order to have healing.
I'm not sure the criteria. I'm not sure. But I do know that when I first started with him and, you know, recommended like Raiden and Dawn and Terry and then Truth in Tucson, every one of them was getting spectacular results. Everyone. And I would say, this is amazing. I mean, he's just fixing everybody. And then suddenly, there was a storm of people that were rushing to see him. You know, we created a buzz. And I made it a point to call people and find out their results, okay? And certain people had spectacular results, like Carolyn, okay? And other people didn't. And then people started thinking they were getting better results with William than with Dr. Ging. And I have to be
she'd be good, and I had thought of her as soon as Dr. Ging came upon us, and that was because she's been through so much in her life and everything else, and she's looks like a beautiful model, but she's got lots and lots of trauma and stuff. And she's coming to Arizona for a change, just to try to see if the weather changes her problems and everything else. And I thought, gee, maybe she should just go see Dr. Ging instead also. But
she's
been through all different kinds of doctors everywhere and that.
Yeah, I just want to say that some people go into total shock about how painful what he does is on your forehead and on your body, okay? And then they don't get better. And then he tells them, well, you have to see me 3 or 4 or 5 times. And, you know, he's charging $300 a visit, okay? And it gets really expensive.
An hour.
And
300 an hour.
300 an hour.
300 an hour.
And I've seen him be generous with people. And I don't like to say this because I want to give a totally positive recommendation, because it's better for the person to go in. Hi, Janine.
Hi. Hi, Janine.
Sorry, hello. You're not anonymous. We know who you are. It's better for the person to go in fully positive. But then, you know, I've gotten people that I love and respect that have gone in and said, never going to go see that guy again, you know?
Well, I'm very certain I'm going to get down there Wednesday night.
Okay. Would you like to say your name and your city? Somebody in New York, if they want to say something, and they don't have to.
Be welcome.
Okay, let's get started.
Yeah, let's get started.
All right.
Yes.
All right. So then people don't bitch. All right.
All right. Ready. I thank everyone for being here today. It is the 19th of October.
Muted.
I got the ding.
The recording has started.
This is October 19th, 2020. Wynn and Terry in Sedona. This is our Monday night wild card night. And we've had an ongoing rapport with celestial sources that identify themselves as being at the very top point or close to the top point of creation. And we've had numerous conversations with them about everything under the sun and under the moon, about how the universe works, how we get trapped in this realm. They demonstrate wisdom, and they demonstrate tremendous scientific understanding of the way things come together in the universe and how the universe is the way it is and how it got screwed up. And, you know, for the past, one of the topics that's been an ongoing topic on our Sunday morning calls is how the universe got created. Because they say they were here before there was a universe. They were just pure energy of awareness. They were millions of them. And they were outgrowths of what they call the one infinite creator, or the awareness. And so it just so happens we have a regular person on our call, Lauren Zanier, who happens to have a background in how he does have a PhD, but I have a feeling that his knowledge goes far beyond his PhD, and he understands in a scientific way the mystical, metaphysical aspects of creation. And I have to watch it because he can talk over people's heads. But last time he was on, I talked too much at the beginning and everyone complained and said, we want more, hear Lauren more. And they also said, we didn't understand him, but we felt really good energy when he talked. So I'm going to do that today. And Lauren, how did you get this deep understanding of how things work?
Well, be very frank about it, I guess. When I picked up this body, I didn't have any loss of memory from before. And so I picked up where I last left off last time around. And but I also had some experiences, rather unique experiences, that several of which is I broke out of the matrix a few times.
Now you remember what happened to you, what was going on for you between lifetimes, yes?
Yeah. To an extent,
remember,
not as well as what I was doing like last few times around, you know. But the between lives thing has been interesting. But you see, we're not dealing with memory. Memories are mental image pictures that are copies of events and stuff, and they can be altered by the individual themselves and by others. So, but there is a point here where the difference between reality and actuality. Whereas reality, you're dealing with you look around you and you see things through your own filters, perceptual filters and stuff. And it's pretty damn real. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, but actually,
it's real, but it's distorted. Yes.
It's seeing it through a viewpoint and a point of view. You've got your own perspective on it, and that perspective, it's different than actuality. Actual is something entirely different, and reality has a glimmering of actuality, but it's only a glimmering of it. It's an interpretation. It's not the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
You never really get that until you actually experience it directly.
Yes. What you're saying is true for everyone on this call, right? Everyone has their, shall we say, reality filter. Even when you're studying our materials.
Even me, I've broken through it. I have my own reality too. Have to work through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is because we are all flowing through the universe on our own trajectories. We're having experiences over many, many lifetimes. And plus, we're in a physical reality where we are programmed as to what reality is by the media, the news, religion, and everything else. So
even our DNA.
So everyone has the challenge that wants to evolve. If you don't want to evolve, you're just going to go along from day to day and live inside the reality that you're creating as a result of all your past. And people get onto the idea that it is possible to grow. It's possible to expand. And then becomes the challenge of, okay, how do I go from having this reality that I'm living inside of to get outside of it to a bigger matrix, you could say, and see things from the perspective of the larger matrix. Does that sound right to you?
Something like that. There's actually two levels. There's a local matrix, and then there's the more of a multi-dimensional matrix, multi-universe,
yeah,
a multi-dimensional matrix also.
And for whatever reason, you seem to have the unique ability to move out of the lower reality system and directly perceive from the higher matrix point of view.
I kind of like that. And I'm not perfect. So I make a major effort. I always have pioneering horror.
At least you move back and forth. You get an expanded space, and you get a contracted space, and you get expanded. It's not like you're totally living on top of a mountain, looking down on everything at all times and seeing it.
No,
but a good portion of the time, you're on the top of a mountain, or at least more than most people, and then you are able to create a verbal understanding for your own conscious self of some of the processes that people are not usually aware of. I mean, that's what it seems to me. Does that sound right?
In essence, yeah. There's a, you know, a number, you know, millennia back, we had, there were, here on this planet, there were three repositories, two that, and we, history talks about one of those, and that was the Library of Alexandria, okay? And there's actually nine libraries, and including its satellites. In Egypt, and it was a Renaissance period in our history. And there is a in order to the grounds, you know, the schools there were it was a separate state within a state, and like a free port and stuff. But in order to become a member there, you had to demonstrate to your peers there that you had you were an independent thinker.
So now, this is, are you talking about? Excuse me for interrupting you. Okay, but. You're talking about there was a school that was of more advanced thinkers or perceivers, right?
Yeah, the fathers of the sciences, the arts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. medicine.
Where was this? Where was the school? Where was it?
It was Alexandria, Egypt.
Oh, in Egypt, it was the Alexandria Library, right?
Yeah, and there were actually nine libraries.
Mm-hmm. Okay, everyone's heard about that.
Yeah, like for instance, they talk about the Royal Library. Well, the Royal Library was part of the Royal Compound. There were two wings, and one dealt with ancient history that goes back hundreds of thousands of years, and the other side was our artifacts and such from the current age of different races of beings on this planet. And then you had the other libraries, the central libraries, et cetera. But you the point here is that you had to, in order to become a member, in order to become a janitor, if you will, or a student, put it this way, a student, there, you had to demonstrate to your peers a screening that you demonstrated independent thought, independent reason. Mm-hmm. Then somebody would sponsor you. Either from the royal family or somebody else, and it was very sought after position to be able to sponsor a new person there, sponsor him for life. And so Socrates, you know, you name it, these fathers of, we're all students there.
Socrates is one of the people that
becomes students.
Socrates had access.
Yes. And,
now, supposedly, I'll just throw this in, Terry and I were there, okay? You know, Terry was a librarian of some sorts. And I don't know exactly what I did, but somebody told me in a reading, not my sources, and I never really talked to our sources about this, but they told me, you know, I have these two nephews, Danny and Jason. Jason's come into the call, and they said that they were my students, or working underneath me at the Alexandria Library. but I don't know exactly what I did there. But Terry seems, sometimes she's, Terry, are you there? Let's hear it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Lauren, what did he say about Socrates being there?
Well, he said Socrates was one of the people that had access to the Alexandria Library.
All right.
And I imagine it was a secret. It probably didn't even tell his wife.
I wasn't his wife. Oh, I was his wife, but that was Socrates. Were they the same period of time, though?
Now, that I don't know, okay? I don't know. Lauren, when you say Socrates, did you mean Socrates in the time that he was in a body in Egypt as Socrates, or previously, or afterwards, or what?
Is Lauren here? Hello, Lauren? Did his phone cut out?
Well,
this is
what did you say?
He dropped out.
He dropped out. Okay,
let's wait a moment.
He'll be back
there's
in a moment.
There's a lot of electrical activity going on. There's little tiny tremors all up and down Washington, Vancouver, and down into California going on right now. So we've noticed his phone drops out more.
I just came down off the mountain in Northern California here, and I never saw a dead bear off the side of the road on Highway 32 at about 4,000 feet. And I've been coming up that road for 25 years, never ever saw a bear. I know there's brown bears around, but they never crossed that road. And I stopped and asked, I told the forest department, the fire department about it, because they were a few miles down there. And they said, you know, I said, do you think it's because of the fires that maybe they're being pushed out of their natural habitat? They said it could be. But now that you're saying earthquakes, you know, animals feel earthquakes and they get really restless and start leaving if they feel that happening. So maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, that could be because animals can really feel the ground, and they tend to disappear or have odd patterns if there's tremors going on.
Yeah, I mean, this one, unfortunately, he got hit as he was trying to cross.
Oh.
His head, it was really hard for me. I started crying. His head was all bloody, and there was a trail of blood across the road. So he was trying to get the other side, but... You know, bears, I've just never seen that before. And I've been dwelling in forests for decades. I've never seen that before.
Was that last night, Miranda?
Just now. Just that's okay. Why I was late for the call. I went and stopped at the fire department. Yeah.
I happened to drive that route last night.
You what?
I drove that route, the 32, from the 89 to the 99.
Oh, really? Yesterday?
Yeah. Yesterday, oh, yeah, they're coming back.
We must just miss each other because I was there, too. I've been in that area for a couple days. I thought you were in Southern California.
Yes, but I was traveling with my my girlfriend, and we on the way back, we came from Chester.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah. Lauren still has her in his back.
Well, let's keep waiting. Terry?
All right.
Yeah.
Do you remember your time in the Alexandria Library?
Yes, I do.
And what do you remember about it?
Well, a lot of data, a lot of scrolls, a lot of scrolls, little statues, or different artifacts were coming in, and there was a premium on space of where to put it. And So there was, like, they had organized into different rooms that would have different things in them, a different category. And so there was a premium on space, and there was a conflict over what would go into what person's space. That's what I remember.
Now, do you remember me being there?
Well, yeah, I remember that you were there, and you were a senior to me, and
You mean I was bossing you around again?
Yeah, you were, and we didn't always agree either.
Oh my God, that explains it, right?
Anyway,
I'm looking yeah. here to see the Library of Alexandria was accidentally destroyed by Julius Caesar during the siege of Alexandria in 48 BC. Now, when was
there
Socrates?
Was apparently not, according to what Lauren was saying, there were nine libraries. It consists of a library system. And
hi.
They weren't
Can
all...
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome back, Lauren.
Welcome back.
Where did you go?
Somebody called me I got dropped off. Somebody called in and just disconnected me. But anyway, what I was saying was that the library Lhasa, the underground library in Lhasa in Tibet, this where the Dalai Lama, people don't know this. Is one of his main charges is the caretaker for that library, and it goes back hundreds of thousands of years. And that's the reason the Chinese invaded Tibet, took it over, because they wanted access to that library because they had advanced technologies in it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I was just looking up little bit on the Alexandria Library, and it was indicated that in 49 BC, Julius Caesar. Now, you know what? As we talk about this stuff, keep in mind that we really.
That was a short story, by the way.
A short story?
Short story.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Shore. Shore story.
What is it? I don't understand what that means.
It means it's something that's fabricated.
Oh, about Julius Caesar burning it down.
Right. There was a fire at that time, but it was the dock, the loading dock, where they did. Library exchanges with other libraries, and and there were 2,700 scrolls that it was an accidental fire, and at any rate, there were 2,700 scrolls that were destroyed or mutilated with this accidental fire. So
is this the one that I'm referring to when I found Julius Caesar accidentally burned?
Yes.
In 49 BC? Is that the right time?
Yes. Yeah, that is the right time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And the
now Socrates.
It was an accident.
Yeah, that's what it said. Socrates was born.
Well, okay, let me finish this first. Okay. What's his name? Cleopatra's buddy.
Mark Antony.
For something like 600 copper talons. Did a replacement. From the Mesopotamia and Pergamum libraries, replacement, tenfold replacement, 27,000 scrolls to replace it as a gift to a goodwill gesture gift to Cleopatra the sixth and the.
Mark Antony was Cleopatra's paramour, right?
Yes.
So he was trying to impress her.
Not exactly. But because they were trying to combine empires. The Egyptian Empire, which is. Put all the other empires throughout the world together, and it had more wealth than all the other empires put together.
Mm-hmm. Egypt did.
So, Egypt did, yes. Mm-hmm. So the Romans were trying to make a deal with Cleopatra. Actually, started with her father, and so they could combine forces. Well, Octavian didn't like that. That's another story. But at any rate, he was involved in Julius Caesar's assassination, and directly involved. And also Cleopatra's assassination. She didn't commit suicide. It was an assassination. At any rate, now go up several hundred years later, and you have Constantine, Emperor Constantine, Saint Constantine, which is kind of an oxymoron because he was a full blown sociopath, and and recognized as such. All right.
They
did in terms of Roman, yeah. But anyway, he had all the characteristics of a full blown sociopath, okay. And but anyway, so he wanted to do a cover up because he wanted that library. So he goes in, raids that library. 325 A.D., 324 and 325 A.D., and brings all those records and stuff over to Iznik, Turkey, that 6 miles south of Iznik, Turkey, in underground catacombs, where it still exists, not in very good repair, but at any rate, and then uses that cover story, uses it saying the whole library was burned down by Julius Caesar. It was a lie. Mm-hmm. Politics, right?
what period of time were you in the library?
I wasn't in the library itself. I had access to it through a fellow who was a Jesuit.
It was like a teenager. They had members or people that were approved to study there.
Yeah, in Alexandria. This is according to their records.
Yes.
Now, you know, Socrates was 469, was born, 469 B.C.
And oh, yeah, sorry, not Socrates. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So, and you were saying he was going to the library. He had access to it, yes?
He had access to it, yes. But the,
yes.
But the...
He didn't work there, he just had access to it. But
yes.
I doubt whether his wife, if now I'm telling you guys, we're talking about all this stuff, and I am not going to say any of it's true. You know, I mean, but you can decide yourself, and we'll see. You know, there's patterns that keep repeating, and I would take the guess that there was all this secret knowledge. And there was a lot of secret knowledge in that period of time. And that if our story of the Ra intervention with Ra-Ta is true, which was 10,000 years ago, then it was very likely some of the esoteric knowledge of the Ra group was in that library, as well as being adopted by various secret societies. No one had control over it, but people in general didn't want to give that knowledge out without getting some kind of response from people, wanting some kind of control over people in exchange for the knowledge, which became the secret societies. And this was 10,000 years ago. But it seems to me the Library of Alexandria did not fit into the model of a secret society. Maybe somewhat because you needed entry to get into it, of being a certain amount of intelligence.
Yes, pass exams.
That's what?
Yeah, you had to pass these exams. In other words,
you had to pass
the
exams. Yeah,
that you were an independent thinker. There was also two people in that history too that went beyond. That was it? It's basically prime cause, and they could create things on the spot.
Now, to get access to the library, you didn't necessarily have to buy a membership, and you did not have to take vows.
You couldn't.
Is that
you couldn't?
Yeah,
that's correct.
You
couldn't. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was different from a secret society where you did have to take vows and you had to make promises and pledges. So the Library of Alexandria was like freely giving the deep stuff to people that were just qualified through being independent thinkers and smart. Not from people that were going
They could go out and disseminate the knowledge.
Yeah, they didn't have to take vows and make promises about sharing the knowledge with other people. So, in any case, you think I knew you in Alexandria, Lauren? I wouldn't be surprised.
Like I mentioned, you know, I knew this fellow, met him in my teens, this time around, and he was one of two people he was a philologer, you know, means love of words, and a translator and stuff. He knew a number of these languages that were as though he was there, okay, and he was very conversant in it. The only two languages he wasn't really facile, very conversant at, was the Egyptian hieroglyphics there's Demotic, which is the common language in Egypt at that time. Hieroglyphics with the which is script, and then there was Hieratic. So he wasn't fully facile in Hieratic, which is an engineering language. And the how do you build a pyramid? Oh, here's the engineering on it.
I can see if I was there, I know what happened between you and me. You know what it was? Every day it would become the end of the day, and I'd be saying, when are we going to get that kid out of here? My time's up. I got to go home.
Okay.
Never mind.
I got it. At any rate, the anyway, he was his job was to translate all these records from that library into Latin.
Now, who was this?
The Black
Pope. Who was this?
For the Black Pope. His name was Joe Cronin, a junior.
Joe Cronin.
Yeah, junior. And
his name in this life. You met him in this life, and that's what he did in that life, right?
He dropped out of the Jesuit order because he had a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
He came home to next door when I was living in Warren, Ohio, in grade school. He came home. It's an interesting story, but I won't go into it. And but anyway, I broke him out of the nervous breakdown. And in the process of doing so, he had me scurrying all over the place because he had a photographic memory. And so we're doing translations of these documents that he had copies of. They were salted around the planet, you know, in private libraries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how I come to find out about all this stuff. It was only one of two people that I had this had access to that Library of Alexandria that was taken over to Isneck, Turkey, and in these underground catacombs. It was where the first ecumenical council took place. Was 6 miles north of there.
Wow.
And they used those records for the first ecumenical council. Some of those records, and there's stuff in there that's mind-boggling. Historically, mind-boggling.
Well, give me an example.
well, some of the stuff dealing with herbs and such. You know communicate with plants and find out what their properties were, for example, just by communicating with them. And and very, very specifically, and et cetera. I mean, not just plants, minerals too. And because everything's alive. And it just has a different consciousness. Well, how do you communicate that and recognize that stuff in terms of chemistry? You think this the flat world theory? No, it was round. They could navigate around the planet, and they had airships.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's not saying that there weren't degraded parts on the planet. There were, but we had several different races of beings on this planet, and living on different continents. And you have archaeological records that are showing this now, you know, this coming to light. Advanced technologies, how to build a pyramid. Now, I'm not talking about the current versions, but the really old ones, the ones that were built, like the Cheops pyramid, for instance. The information and using two different types of technologies to actually build it. One of which is accretion. They quarry the stone, turn it into powder and sand, ship it over. Mix some chemicals in with it, you know, and mold it right in place.
Wow!
And they didn't have to the big stones. They would cut those, pre-cut those, and they had advanced technology on that, using these discs, you know, like a boring. And cutting saws that were very accurate, and the and could cut these large stones. They had people there that were not like regular humans here. They were giants. Also [S2] Wow. [S1] Working in this and this stuff.
Was that the Nephilim?
Some of them were, but not necessarily. There were a number of different races of giants on the planet, and here in the United States, for instance, the Smithsonian Institute has thousands of bones and stuff from these giants that have been excavated and stuff. There were.
I think Terry is trying to ask a question.
When I say giants, I'm saying between 9 feet and 35, 36 feet, 39 feet.
Wow.
Are you remembering all this?
Me?
Who are you
no.
Talking to?
Lauren, is he remembering this? Does he have recall of that period? Or did he gain this information?
No, this is a matter of record. This is a matter of record, okay? I'm kind of a newcomer to this planet. But at any rate, what I wanted to mention here was when you talk about quantum mechanics, okay, a quantum field. It works well on a molecular and submolecular level. It doesn't work on a macrocosmic level. It doesn't explain the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
It partially explains the background thing, which is. Before it was called the ether, but it explains some of that, but the ether or this background, what's going on in the background on a subatomic level and on a molecular level, you can get rid of the molecular stuff, but you still have what's called the vacuum. But the vacuum is basically that ether, and it is very busy. I mean, real busy. It just not physically manifested, materially, not materially manifested, but it's there. It's like a whole sea. We're living in a sea, even if it's a near perfect vacuum at close to absolute zero. It's very active. It's very busy, but it's not material.
Lauren, Lauren, we have about a minute left.
It's not material. Not material. Got it. That all makes sense.
Let me ask a question. See if anyone has a question. See if they understood. If they kind of followed us.
Unmuted.
Now, are you guys following?
Yeah.
Not you, Terry.
Yes. My answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes. My answer is yes, too.
Is this interesting?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And does anyone have a question?
We want to listen to as much Lauren as we can. Lauren, thank you.
All right, Lauren, I can retire.
I didn't mean that. He's just
a
wonderful
addition. We need to pick your brain.
He's very confirming. He confirms lots of thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, glad I can help.
Okay.
We love having you.
We're going over the whole plan of healing now.
I wanted to say something real quick. I thought it was really interesting that what Lauren said about Constantine, that he was such a topic. Is that what you said? Because he was the one that edited out of the Bible some really important stuff like reincarnation. So I understand.
Yes, that's correct. It wasn't actually him. It wasn't actually him, but Eusebius. Eusebius, Constantine's counterfeiter. Mm-hmm. That was his job, counterfeiting. And
his job was what?
Counterfeiting, inventing. You know, taking old scrolls. You know, wiping them out and putting new information on them and calling it BC as opposed to AD.
So in other words, he was rewriting it all with some kind of agenda, right?
Yeah, under Constantine's direction, he was part of his inner privy council.
Hey, does Constantine work for the media today?
Most likely, and Eusebius too.
I see.
Oh, it's the Rockefeller.
It's those gross repeating patterns. All right, we got to close off, okay? We got to get off and give BBS their station back.
All right.
So, Lauren, thank you so much. We're going to do this again.
Thank you, Lauren.
We love you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to stop.
This session is no longer being recorded.
Thank you.
And on that note,
thank you.
Thank you all for being here. And we'll see you. Call Planet Healing.
See you in a minute.
Yeah.
Goodbye.